And this whole fact of the natural alliance that used to exist between the United States and Russia was simply scrubbed away from not only from the curriculum, but also from the people's awareness.
Hey all, given current geopolitical realities, this is one of the most important interviews I've ever done. So please watch and share and comment below. So it's with Alex Craner. I was invited to Dubai recently to a hedge fund and investor managers conference. And I met Alex there. Stunning talk, incredible erudite individual on Russia and the West, and has published books on same. He's a Croatian individual, but living in Monaco for decades. And his insights are incredible. Trust me on this. So please watch, share, comment below, and enjoy this correct view of the world, I would say.
Hey, Alex, great to meet you.
Great to meet you, Ivar. Yeah.
Good to meet you as well. I wasn't actually aware of you before this fantastic conference in Dubai and seeing your compelling talk, I'll have to say. And I'll briefly just mention you have a book out now, Grand Deception, and it covers the real intricacies and truth about the relationship between Russia and the West. Am I correct? And can we talk about that?
Yes, you are correct, and we can talk about this. It's a book I wrote in 2017, and I self-published it on Amazon. The reason why I felt compelled to write it is because through my day job as a hedge fund manager at the time, I came into contact with certain people and certain groups that, after I got to know them and what they were about, I realized that they were kind of pushing us towards World War III between Western powers and Russia. And I thought somebody needed to expose these people. Mm. And I reckoned I probably knew more than the average person about this, and I decided that I'd write the book. Because I lived through the outbreak of war in former Yugoslavia. I've seen how quickly war can change human psychology and how almost the minute bombs start flying, the minute there's destruction and casualties, the collective psychology suddenly polarizes and people can kind of close their ranks behind their leadership, even if they hate them. You know, you could envision perfectly the French people closing ranks behind Macron, Germans behind Olaf Scholz and so forth. And then, you know, the conduct of war becomes the prime obsession of a society. It becomes almost tribal. It doesn't matter if the other side has an argument, if there's nuances to the situation. Everything goes into war fighting, like we're seeing today between Russia and Ukraine. And so I felt extremely nervous that this network, this power network, which is somewhere on the, primarily probably in London, but also on the axis London Wall Street, that they were dragging us in that exact direction. And so I thought, I need to know that I have given my contribution to the preservation of peace by trying to unmask this network. And so I published a book. I self-published it. I wasn't a known author. It appeared on Amazon. Some people bought it, you know, like you sell like 2-3 copies a month. But a few weeks after it was published, a history professor in the United States picked it up, wrote a review, and published it on Huffington Post, which for me was like the mom, I'm on TV moment, you know? And so I wanted to share it with some friends, but I realized that the article had disappeared after about 3 hours. So the Huffington Post review was disappeared. And then within the week, my book was banned. Amazon withdrew my book from circulation. And I found out why, because somebody from the State Department wrote a letter to Amazon, and that was that. No questions asked. They just delete you, and that's it. And what happened next is that one independent publisher approached me, and they wanted to republish the book. They took the next month to comb through everything to make sure that there's nothing they could be sued about, or, you know, that there isn't a problem. And then they republished it. We changed the title because the initial title was The Killing of William Browder. The new title was grand deception, truth about the Magnitsky Act, Russia, anti-Russian sanctions, and I forget, it's a long thing. So they republished it under their label with a new title, and again, 6 weeks later, the book was banned again. So I think I must have hit the wire somewhere, because it was clearly something that they did not want published and read and known by the greater public. But, you know, as it is with censorship, sometimes censorship attracts attention. Mm. So, you know, I kind of continued to give the book away in PDF to whoever asks. Red Pill Press put them on their website. And a lot of people asked me about the book. So I ended up going on a lot of podcasts to talk about these things. And I think that to the extent that I'm not even the only one who understands these things and is talking about them, maybe we've been successful to a point, because the war kind of went on, but it didn't break out at full scale, you know, confrontation between NATO and the United States and Russia. And then I think we have to keep speaking out and keep turning up and making sure that it doesn't escalate to that extent, because that would be the end of pretty much civilization.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. And I wasn't fully aware of it, the multiple kind of cycles of banning at all. I had just seen your talk yesterday. So maybe could you touch on points in the book? We obviously are doing a very short format here.
Yes.
But some of the key points, you got the understanding through probably the quite in-the-know hedge fund type people, I mean, I guess, and your own experience in the past and what you observed.
Yeah, so the book starts from the person of William Browder. William Browder was the owner of the largest foreign hedge fund in Russia during the 1990s, when Russia was going through the transition from communism to, let's call it, free market capitalism. And that was when literally thousands of Westerners descended on Russia to participate in this transformation and privatization. And what ended up happening is that this was like the largest pirate raid on Russia ever orchestrated. They literally siphoned off trillions of dollars worth of assets out of Russia. And William Browder was one of the participants in this whole thing. He got kicked out of Russia in 2005, a few years after Putin has been in power. And then he became, from one of the loudest advocates of Putin, apologists, to one of, he styles himself as Putin's number one enemy. And then he continued to lobby very strongly for the so-called Magnitsky Acts around the world. Magnitsky is the name of his former accountant, whom he says that he's a lawyer, but he wasn't a lawyer, who ended up arrested and who died in prison in Russia. And so William Browder dressed this up as a human rights issue and started pitching this Magnitsky Act as a ostensibly as legislation to defend human rights around the world. Of course, it has nothing to do with human rights. It has to do with erecting legal barriers between Russia and Western jurisdictions, because Russian investigators have put together literally hundreds of investigative dossiers to pursue the stolen assets through jurisdictions like New York and London and Cyprus and British Virgin Islands and Caymans and so forth. And so Bill Browder was able to lobby the Magnitsky Act through U.S. Congress first in 2012. And the passage of this legislation is today deemed as the opening salvo of the new Cold War. And from there he continued, and he managed to get the Magnitsky Act passed in another 30 Western jurisdictions. And I realized that this was a massive problem. And obviously, the narrative on which the whole act was based, the whole legislation was based, is a complete fraud. It's a complete lie. Bill Browder formulated it in, he articulated it in a book called Red Notice, which they turned into a best international bestseller. And I read the book, and you know, at first blush, when you first read it, you think like, wow, that's amazing, because it's really well written. I'm convinced absolutely that it was ghostwritten by Lee Child, because it was going to be turned into a Hollywood blockbuster movie. Yeah, that was the plan, to make everything a household thing, meaning, you know, a massive demonization of Russia, lionization of these pirates like Bill Browder, and a complete inversion of reality. It didn't really happen that way because, you know, I wrote my book. There was an investigative reporter called Lucy Commissar, who has been writing about this very prolifically. She happens to be a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. And there's also a documentary filmmaker named Andrei Nekrasov, who produced a documentary film about it called The Magnitsky Act Behind the Scenes. And so the public has been exposed to this. Whoever wanted to know about this got to know about this. But for me, the real, the real revelations in this is that as I started researching what Browder had done, when I tried to find out who the people behind him are, because he's obviously just a frontman, and then I started researching historical facts that are related to all this, I realized that there's like a 200-year continuity of these relationships, and that there's a massively important historical background to all this. And so this led me down a trail of discovery that I ended up kind of condensing in my book. And I discovered many things that I never knew, even though I studied American history. I never knew that Russia had any role to play in U.S. Civil War, for example. But as it turns out, if it wasn't for Russia, the United States probably wouldn't exist today. Russia was number one ally of the United States throughout the 19th century. It was a very close alliance and friendship, which kind of just was thrown overboard when the British went back into the United States and infiltrated their, you know, the government structures of power and these elite clubs. And they founded the Federal Reserve Bank, and then they started funding these various foundations and endowments that financed the universities, the scrubbing of history, the airbrushing of history was going on during the early decades of the 20th century. And this whole fact of the natural alliance that used to exist between the United States and Russia was simply scrubbed away from not only from the curriculum, but also from the people's awareness. Mm. And why are there natural allies, the United States and Russia? Because both were opposed to the British Empire. And, you know, the United States today celebrates Independence Day. But most Americans, if you ask them independence from whom or from what, they no longer know. They're like, oh, well, I don't know. It's barbecues and fireworks, I guess. It was independence from the British, who were the oppressors of their colonies, including the United States. And Russia has always been an ally to peoples and nations who wanted to decolonize. That is still true today. Mm-hmm. So we have this opposition between, let's call it the multipolar world led by countries like Russia and China, and the empire and its vassals, which are, you know, still philosophically, strategically headquartered in London, but acting through their, you know, military global cup, the United States.
The State Department.
And so that is, I think, the greatest risk to peace in the world. And the first stop would be war with Russia, which happens to have 6,000 nuclear warheads. So the risk is nuclear holocaust. So this, to my mind, is the most important thing we need to speak out about and that we need to push back against. Because otherwise, you know, we could be burned to a crisp if we just quietly acquiesce and moonwalk into the next world war.
Yeah, no, that's a super summary. And I just because I kind of a history, both mainly World War II, but I was aware of the Russian connection, but only vaguely way back. So fascinating and so well summarized, Alex. So we're keeping this short, but maybe if we could just go through then this risk of war. The problem is best laid plans of mice and men. So they might go in thinking they're doing a limited strike, and it's just uncontrollable once it starts. I agree. But Putin then, the Carlson interview, where do you think Putin really is? I am fully up for believing he's a tough guy. He's a strong man. That's no question. I'm sure he's oppressed opponents, but who hasn't? Look at the CIA. But where do you see Putin and the current Russian regime? Are they conducting themselves reasonably, given NATO encroaching and having the coup in Ukraine in 2014 and pushing on their borders? What do you reckon?
Okay. So how do I summarize this? Because this is an answer that could go on for 2 hours. Okay. So first of all, regarding Putin, so he's been demonized practically nonstop in the Western media for about 20 years now. Not one story can you find that deals with Putin in even balanced way, let alone a positive way. So when I was researching for my book, this also covered 2014, when Russia took over Crimea. And then the demonization went into overdrive. That's when we got like these photo ops with Photoshop
Shop.
Works with Putin with the Hitler mustache and all these things. And so for me, it was very easy to believe that Putin is a typical strongman. So he's going to be corrupt at some level. He maybe does ugly things. And so I thought, okay, let's go try to find out. So first I just kind of looked at the Russian aggregates and statistics and to see what's his performance track record. And his performance track record in Russia is absolutely spectacular. So he took a country that was completely broken on its belly. Everything was disintegrating, and he turned it around and turned it into one of the most advanced countries in the world, a power to be reckoned with, and the only one of the few powers in the world that can say no to the empire. So as a leader of his country, which is what his job is, he has done tremendously well. I've actually found zero evidence that he ever had anybody assassinated. Because even those most celebrated cases in the West, nobody in Russia really thinks that Putin has done it. You know, like starting with the family of Anna Politkovskaya, the journalist who got killed, and then everybody in the West knew that it was Putin who did it. Anna Politkovskaya's own family know that he didn't, because she was killed by the Chechen mafias, because she was reporting on Chechen war and on all of these jihadi mafias that that coalesced from there. And so on that count, everything I learned about Putin's conduct of policy, of the way he runs Russia, of the way he presents himself as a leader, it's remarkably positive, even in his statements. And we have to also remember that he's not a common man. He's a man in charge of a country of 150 million people. And that means that he is responsible for those 150 million people. And if you need a visual on that, imagine that you're a captain of a ship that maybe has 5,000 passengers on it. You're responsible to them. You're accountable to them. So if you have on board an official who maybe is putting the ship's safety in jeopardy, you have to deal with this official, right? So if you deal with this official in a harsh way, does that make you evil? I don't think we can judge it in this way, because his prime responsibility is to all the people on board. So that's what has to be taken into account. Now, the question that often confuses people, and there's two diverging schools of thought on it, is Putin controlled opposition? And many people think like, because he was the young leader of global world, what's it called? World Economic Forum. And Russia went along with the whole pandemic thing and so forth. I looked into all those things, and I can tell you that probably very close to 100% he's real opposition. He's not control opposition. And there's a number, we don't have time for that now, but we can talk about it in another time. There's a number of very, very strong argument where you can see that clearly, because Russian government policy and action has thrown such massive monkey wrenches into the works of these globalists that there's absolutely no way that they're on board. And you can contrast that with the conduct of the Soviet authorities, who were control opposition. And if you contrast those two, you can see that there's a complete discontinuity. And this is why Western powers could get along with the Soviet Union, even during the coldest periods of the Cold War, whereas they cannot get along with the modern Russia, even though it's no longer communist, even though there's no ideological rift between them, but they absolutely hate Putin and they hate Russia, and it's for a good reason.
Brilliantly put, Alex, and you have played right into my confirmation bias, of course, but I was just myself, from what I know, much less than you and nowhere researched. My instinct and everything I've seen, if you take away the veil, the fog of the Western legacy media, absurd caricatures, I'm looking at everything and seeing it exactly as you described it, intuitively. Yeah. And I don't think I'm naive. But Alex, we'll follow up with a Zoom interview and go into much more detail. No question about it, but thank you so much for this brief insight. Profound.
My privilege, Ivor, and an honor to join you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That'll do it, folks. Hope you enjoyed being enlightened. And also, great thanks to my Patreon and PayPal supporters. YouTube's algorithm is demonetizing most things nowadays, even though they don't technically break the rules. But the algorithm has certain proclivities, which seem to be of a very globalist nature. So that's it. Anyone else who can help fund for me to interview, to analyze, and to get the reality out there, so hopefully people can push back against some of the nonsense that's been occurring over the past years. Thank you.